Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
If you've been driving recently in the countryside, you've likely noticed that does are on the move. What's happening? Let's go in depth with Jim Coffey, wildlife researcher with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. So, Jim, how many deer do we have in the state of Iowa? What's the population estimate?
That's kind of a tricky question to answer, Bob. That's something that we struggle with all the time. So what we tend to do is use an index across the state, and that's just a measure of whether the population is going up or down. And when we measure population total numbers, we have to determine what time of the year that is. So we typically use a number between 350,000 and 500,000 deer, depending upon the time of year.
That seems like a lot to me. Is that a lot or no?
Well, it depends. It depends on the habitats available and about the social carrying capacity of the people of Iowa and what they'll tolerate. You have to realize there's over 3 million people in Iowa, so that means there's 6 people for every 1 deer in the state. So it kind of depends on your perspective of whether that's too many or not. And people's opinions can change rather quickly on whether they think there's too many deer in their area compared to other parts of the state.
Well, I think I was reading somewhere that the chance of hitting a deer any given year in Iowa is about 1 in 50.
Yeah, those numbers kind of jump around a little bit. We do an annual kill estimate that we work with the Department of Transportation on, and we measure that in billions of miles. And there is a good chance that over your lifetime, as an average Iowa driver, you're going to hit a deer or two.
Well, it seems like I see a couple, dead every morning on the highway.
Right, and that's one thing that we really try to emphasize with our drivers is that, we have to understand that we are sharing that landscape out there, and that deer have some pretty specific biological needs and movements and times of year. And that's why we like to put out press releases in November and again here in June. This is another major movement time for deer as these does are beginning to have their annual fawns.
Well, yeah, I got a little note from you this morning that be on the watch out for does, that the does are moving.
Correct. Yep. The first week of June, almost through about the 10th or 15th, we'll incorporate about 70% of the fawns born in the state. So those does are looking to be secluded as they have that fawn. So they're moving away from what we would call traditional deer habitat out into secluded areas so that they can have that fawn and increase its survival.
Okay. So explain to me exactly why they're moving around.
So deer are typically very social animals. But when it comes time to have the fawn, the doe does not want to be around other females or other deer in general. The does are kind of isolated by themselves as a group right now, and now as they get to have their own fawn, they're going to move out and be almost exclusively by themselves. So they're going to pick a spot that's very secluded and may not be traditional from what we think of as deer habitat. And what that does is that allows that fawn to be placed on the landscape so that it itself is isolated, and then the doe will return to feed it a couple times a day, and that actually helps increase its survival because it's not concentrated around other animals.
Well, so how come the doe just can't browse around where the fawn is?
Because the fawns are typically considered to be scent-free. So the doe obviously is producing scent, and that might attract a predator to that area. So what she does, because that fawn cannot get up and physically move around and stay up with the doe for about 10 days, she has the fawn and leaves it, and then only returns to it a couple times to minimize its presence on the landscape, which will help increase its overall survival from other predators.
Well, how is that possible for a fawn not to have a scent?
That's one of the biological mysteries, is this: they just do not have, after the birth, the female will consume the afterbirth and lick the fawn clean, and then it just does not produce much scent for a few days.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. We don't know why that happens?
Not to my knowledge. I'm sure there's been some research, but I'm not aware of any understanding of why that is considered that way. And then partially, too, is there is going to be some scent that's produced, but because that fawn is stationary, it doesn't move. It just stays bedded down and waits for the female to return. It's not putting its scent out on the landscape. It's a very concentrated area where that fawn will be located at.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about does on the move with Jim Coffey, wildlife researcher with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources.
I must admit, over the years, I've stumbled across a couple of maybe three, four fawns laying out in the woods somewhere.
It does happen. If we're out and about, and obviously as predators are out and about, you're going to occasionally bump into one of those fawns. And depending on when that fawn is born, how it will react. They can actually get up and run fairly quickly within a few hours after they're born. But they know that their survival is based upon staying still. So typically they'll only get up and run if they're almost actually stepped upon. And that's one way that we as researchers go out and find those fawns is by searching and looking for them in those open fields like that.
Well, what do you want to do when you find them?
Well, it depends on if we're doing a current research project, but in many cases what we would do is we would catch the animal and weigh it, sex it to see if it's a male or female, and then in some cases place radio collars on those animals to determine their movements and their overall survival to help us build better population models.
Well, every time I've run into them, I've just sort of backed off knowing I wasn't going to do them any good. Is that just the best advice?
That's the typical best advice. Is you, if you do happen to stumble upon one, is just observe it and then back away, you know, quickly and straight away from the same direction you came in, because you're obviously leaving a scent path too, and some predator might follow your scent path, and that would lead them right to that fawn.
Well, I'm hoping no predator's sniffing at me, coming at me. Not going to happen, is it?
But what we have to realize is that coyotes are probably the main predators on fawns, and coyotes' typical diet is about 95% mice. But during this time of the year, when they're out in grass fields searching for mice, if they were to stumble upon a fawn, that would be an easy meal for them. So if they were to smell our path that we're walking into, they might get on our path to kind of follow us to see what we're doing, thinking that we're looking for food as well, and that might lead them to a fawn.
And they might just do it out of curiosity, too.
Correct. Yep. Animals are curious. They've got nothing better to do but walk around on the landscape.
Where and when? I guess I should be looking for deer all the time, but sort of the way I do it is I pay particular attention when I'm coming down into creek bottoms or where there's some heavy wooded areas. Is that all right? Is that what I should be doing?
That's what we're kind of trained to do. We typically look at what we consider in our minds to be typical deer habitat. And when we're driving in those roads, we tend to start to think of those same areas where we see deer each morning, and we start to maybe pay more attention in those areas, which is great as a driver. But we have to realize this time of the year with the does is they're much more likely to be moving into more secluded areas. So they might be moving from those typical wooded areas, but moving out into what we wouldn't normally consider typical deer habitat, because remember, they want to get away from other deer. So they might be out more on hillsides or in open fields, places that we don't consider to be typical deer habitat. And the other thing is we typically think of deers moving at dawn and dusk. Well, does this time of the year are more likely to move any time of the day. They're getting ready to give birth, and they want to start moving and getting out to that secluded area. And then when the contractions start, that's going to be where they have their fawn at. So their movements are not necessarily motivated by dawn and dusk like we typically think of in November.
Well, yeah, in my mind, I'm remembering a lot of, especially dusk sightings, they tend to be, you know, herds of deer, not singles. And so that's based upon their doe behavior in the spring versus change of behavior in the fall.
Right. The biology is what really drives it here. In the fall is the rutting behavior where those females are coming into estrus, and they'll be moving, and the bucks will be chasing them or pushing them, trying to wait until they're receptive. So those deer will be moving typically in groups of two or three. And we often remind people that in the fall, you know, as the first deer crosses the road, you must be careful because there's usually a second deer behind it. And in many cases, that may be the buck that's trailing the doe. This time of the year, that female is going to exclude herself from other females. So she's most likely moving by herself, and she's almost in a sneaky way. She doesn't want other people to see where she's going or what the habitat that she's moving into.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about does on the move with Jim Coffey, wildlife researcher with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. What are the bucks doing this time of year?
they're just hanging out together. The bucks will form their own male social groups and just kind of hang out and feed the rest of the summer. They have no real purpose other than just kind of be males hanging out until the rut occurs again next November.
Is it my imagination that I don't see a whole lot of bucks in the spring and fall?
Typically, you're not going to notice them as much. Of course, they've lost their antlers for the year, and they're just starting to grow those antlers back. So unless you're tuned to looking for that antler growth, you're not going to see it for another month or so, probably. But again, those males are more secluded in these bachelor groups. They're staying away. They have no real purpose. They're just finding a good place to stay cool, out of the bugs, and feed.
Well, what's the evolutionary advantage to them hanging out in groups?
Well, the biggest thing is that males do not help support the growth of next year's offspring. They're simply the seed producers. They're the ones that inseminate the females. So there's no biological reason for males and females to associate with each other. So those males will move off in social groups, and deer are social animals. But there's no testosterone that's causing them to fight and to cause damage amongst themselves this time of the year. There'll be some social structure building going on, but in typical, they're very content with living with each other, and the females want to be away from them this time of the year as well, so they just break up into similar sex groups.
Okay, so the males have testosterone surges in the fall?
Absolutely. So the testosterone is going to grow with the photo period change, and then come in November, their testosterone is going to be at their peak, which is when we're going to see the deer fighting and the behavior that goes on that's trying to get that social dominance of which buck gets to mate with which females. So as that testosterone grows, those bucks are going to become more aggressive, and you're going to have a social dominance. So therefore, those bucks are going to kind of partition themselves out into who is the most fit, the one that gets to breed with the most females. And that typically occurs around the 15th of November.
Well, so how does that work out socially? Do the bucks just drive the other bucks, the dominant bucks drive the others away? Or are the females, do they have a say in any of this, the does?
No. The hierarchy itself comes from the males, and that's through the fighting process, so the bucks that are pushing and shoving with each other. And typically the larger adult males, the ones that have already established their dominance, are very secure in their area. They don't have much threat. It's the secondary males that do most of the fighting because they're hoping to become the next dominant male. So there'll be very little fighting with the dominant male, but it's usually the secondary males that do most of the fighting. And in many cases, the youngest males that know they can't compete will be the ones that disperse and move great distances. They're trying to find new open space with males that they can compete with. The females really don't care at that point. They know that they're going to be bred by probably the most dominant buck in the area, and then their job is just to be ready when they're receptive for that buck to be around.
Well, and then I'm just guessing that the dominant males are the ones that have, the better genes that would ensure the survival, that would help ensure the survival of the offspring. So that's good for the doe and the buck, their genetic material.
We would hope so. That's called fitness, is how fit they are, how much ability they have to reproduce and those offspring to be viable. But we have to realize, too, is the window of opportunity to breed is very small. And one buck can't technically breed all females. So even those secondary bucks are going to have a chance to spread their genetics as well.
And it'll be randomly across the females, independent of their genetic superiority to other females?
It just kind of depends, because as dominant buck A is off tending a female, if another female comes into an estrus at the same time, which is usually a very short window of about 24 hours, that one buck can't necessarily service all the does in the area. It's not like having a bull in a pasture that it's one bull that gets to take care of everybody. So that one buck that is the dominant buck will try to tend to as many females as he can, but because the window of opportunity is so short, many times he can't take care of all those females.
Okay, so then if you're not the dominant buck, the best thing to do is disperse, sort of play the lottery, hoping that you'll encounter a female.
It kind of depends on where you're at in the hierarchy, because if you're number two or three, there's the chance that number one could get knocked off somehow. He might die. He might, either from natural causes or from the hunting season. He might get to the point that he's too old and weak and his testosterone starts to fall off, and now you're just the next in line. So there's a play that goes on, whether or not it's worth your effort to stay in a good spot or adventure out and move and hope that you get to a good spot.
Well, that sounds like a whole lot of thinking going on to me.
There's a lot going on with biology, definitely.
Yeah, but a lot of it's probably hardwired. They just have some impulse.
Absolutely, yeah. Most of it is actually hardwired because those young deer, that's the dispersal of genetic material. As those young bucks move away, that actually ensures that they won't be breeding back against offspring of their own genetics. So that if a female has a buck and a doe fawn, typically the fawn female will stay in that same vicinity because she was raised in that area, that the resources are good in that area, but the genetic male of that female will typically be the one that disperses away, realizing that a male somewhere else is probably dispersing into that same area, and that's how the mixture occurs.
Well, what else should we know as the does are moving?
Well, the biggest thing is that we always want to make sure that just people are always on aware that animals are moving around this time of the year. And when we put that on top of the fact that the hay cropping is going on, that just means that animals are up and moving much more. So it's just another time of the year that we know statistically that deer-car collisions are going to increase. So people always need to be aware, but especially this time of the year, and then in November as well. And then, obviously, if you do find a fawn, remember that the best survival technique for that fawn is that the mother has it and then she leaves and comes back. So don't assume that fawn has been abandoned. That fawn has a mother close by, and she's placed it in that area because she feels that that's the most secure location for it to survive.
Thanks to Jim Coffey for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.